Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Rush Limbaugh today suggested that the existence of U.S. elections are now threatened by a movie that expects President Obama to pursue a mass amnesty for illegal aliens following the passage of the health care reform plan. I don't know if Russia believes what he says this time or not, but we do know that there are some 12 million people in the United States for all sorts of reasons, marriage, sick relatives, to support destitute families in their home countries, to commit crimes, to make some money and get out when they can to make their life better. But they're here illegally. They are not documented workers. And the issue of immigration reform has been stewing for many years now. It might be coming to a head during the Obama during the first 4 years of the Obama administration. If there's a second 4 years, maybe that 4 years. But in any event, that's what we're here to talk about today. Joining me in the studio, the Reverend Virginia Lohman Bauman. She currently serves as the Ohio Field Director for Immigration Reform for Church World Service. Ginny, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also Ruben Castilla Herrera. He is Ohio State Director for Reform Immigration for America. Ruben, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here this morning.
And Jason Rivero is the Ohio State Director of the League of United Latin American Citizens, otherwise known as LULAC. He also is Vice President of Business Development for a company where he oversees the expansion of their Spanish language products into several markets, including Columbus. Jason, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I guess let's talk just generally. Were all three of you at the rally in Washington? Ginny?
Yes, I was there.
I was there as well.
And Jason?
I was the only one that didn't attend.
Okay, then you can't talk about that. I wanted to talk about the rally in Washington last weekend. What happened? And also, was it eclipsed by, of course, health care reform? Ruben?
Well, we were able to mobilize 250,000 people, more than 250,000 people together at the National Mall there. It was a national effort. We had several up to 29, 30 states. I know that we were part of organizing at least 960 buses, mostly from the eastern part of the United States, as well as people from the Washington metro area and New York area as well. So we gathered in force. We were noticed, and I don't think that we were eclipsed by what was happening just down a few blocks up from us at all, because we were certainly there, and certainly healthcare is part of our conversation as well.
Ginny, what'd you think?
Oh, I think that it was a remarkable expression of diversity and commitment in our country. All of the faith traditions were represented, both in the interfaith service before the rally and in the participation. The numbers far exceeded what anyone expected, and I do not think it was eclipsed by health reform, except perhaps by the media. But for the folks who were there, it was a strong expression of what's going on across our country. And for folks in Ohio to understand that we had 26 buses filled with people from Ohio, that's remarkable. For people to take time out of their schedules to take a trip to Washington, D.C., and in addition to the rally, something that I helped coordinate and we also did in connection with our Ecumenical Advocacy Day conference was that we coordinated groups of people who met with members of our Ohio delegation to talk specifically about comprehensive immigration reform yesterday in the halls of Congress.
What is the faith community's general position on immigration reform right now?
Well, I think the faith community is, and we delivered a letter to Senator Voinovich yesterday as well as to other elected officials in Ohio setting forth our position, which reflects the concepts that are set forth in the Interfaith Platform for Humane Immigration Reform. And there are actually six principles that the faith community is advocating for in any piece of legislation that may be considered with respect to immigration reform. And these six principles are as follows. Number one, uphold family unity as a priority for all immigration policies. Number two, create a process for undocumented immigrants to earn their legal status and eventual citizenship. Number three, protect workers and provide efficient channels of entry for new migrant workers. Number four, facilitate immigrant integration into our country. Number five, restore due process protections and reform detention policies. And number six, align the enforcement of immigration laws in our country with humanitarian values. And I want to add that in this letter that we delivered to Senator Voinovich and to other members of the Ohio delegation yesterday, where I was representative by diverse faith leaders from across Ohio, this letter had support from all – from the Catholic Church, all of the major Protestant denominations, as well as evangelical churches and prominent African-American church leaders as well. So there is a relative unanimity in the faith community around the issue of comprehensive immigration reform. And that's the message I really wanted to deliver today to the people of Central Ohio, is that the faith community perhaps is ahead of the curve on this issue, but they are committed and they are unified in how we should be treating immigrants in our society.
Yeah, Ruben?
So what Jenny just described was really the base of what our support is. Really, we're talking about families. That's certainly the base of many people's faith. How do we reunify families? This is really about reunifying families, about family issues. And we got a very visual aspect of that at the march and also in different parts of the country that we're doing kind of mirror events as well throughout the country as well. So we are about reunifying families, about workers' rights, and of course a pathway to citizenship. I noticed that you opened up with a comment that Limbaugh. Right, and you know that is there as well. And I have to point out that the term of illegal aliens that's offensive, and lots of times I don't even address I won't address it other than tell people. That is very offensive to some people, and I know I take the risk of people picking up on that, but it has to be addressed. And unfortunately, we have that side that's constantly doing that, and it's probably based on lots of aspects, certainly anti-immigrant, but I would argue also even hate as well.
What about the folks who say they're here illegally, they broke the law by entering the country without documentation and without permission? Why would we reward them with an opportunity to become a citizen?
Well, I don't know that it – from the faith community's perspective, I don't know that we're talking necessarily about rewarding people, because we don't necessarily want people to break the law. But what we do want to do is to reform a broken law. And a good example that we use, you know, and these examples were used in the civil rights movement and they're used today, that I think what a lot of folks don't understand is that when someone enters this country without the proper documents, they are breaking a civil law, not a criminal law. So to call someone illegal is dehumanizing, it's demeaning, and I do think that it's used often to scapegoat people. The example that we use in the faith community is that if your wife or your sister were in labor and was going to die, and the baby was going to die, if you did not speed to the hospital, break the speeding law to get to the hospital, would you do that? And I think many people in Central Ohio would say, well, yes, if my wife or sister were going to die, if I didn't speed to get them to the hospital, I would do that. And I think that what we're witnessing with people coming into the country without the proper documents is they're doing what is necessary so their family won't die, so that they can live.
Jason, I don't want to forget about you over there.
No, that's fine. I'm enjoying the dialogue here. I think – there's so many different circumstances that obviously, but the point that you make is one that is a significant number of those immigrants that are here, and I don't by no means do I feel that any of these bills that have been proposed are rewards. As a matter of fact, that I think the term amnesty is why many of these bills were killed, and in fact they were not very close to amnesty at all, because there were several provisions there and several quantifiers there that people had to meet in order to receive that and go to the back of the line. And that's really what it all is. It's all a matter of economics, because the way I came here, or the way at least my family came in here into this country, was they were able to submit the proper documentation and see that they were financially stable and weren't here to drain the system. But many of these people are here because they can't really prove that, but they are contributing. They're here and providing to the American economy and are paying their taxes are wanting that opportunity, and they're willing to go through whatever steps they need to, but they need to have that opportunity. And the last time we've had major reform was when Bill Clinton was in office, and you can't do that with immigration laws. They have to constantly be changing and constantly looking at the numbers and the figures that need to be adjusted. So,
I think the other issue that I might want to add is how, if there's 11 to 12 million undocumented persons here, what is the base way to do that, the most efficient and most practical, and certainly enforcement, or how would we actually enforce that? And so the pathway to citizenship is going to be have several provisions where people would actually pay taxes, that there would be a pathway where people who want to be citizens would become citizens. And so it really makes better sense for economically for our country, and also for the families, that we create this pathway that they can become citizens.
There is an assumption that if you're an undocumented worker, that means you are not paying taxes. Is that always the case, or do some undocumented workers pay taxes but to a different Social Security number or a different?
Well, for one thing, whenever they buy something, they're paying taxes, any kind of sales tax, and so they're contributing in that way as well. And so yes, in some cases there may be some back taxes that need to be paid, and that's part of the pathway to citizenship that needs to be looked at as well. That's broken. How do we fix that?
Well, and I want to say, let me give a resource to your readers. This is coming from a resource from the Catholic Church called Justice for Immigrants, and they have a wonderful publication called 10 Common Myths About Immigrants, and that's one of them. There's this myth that immigrants don't pay taxes. Immigrants do pay taxes in the form of income, property, sales, and taxes at the federal and state level. There are different varying accounts, again, because of this issue with Social Security numbers, but studies have shown that immigrants pay between $90 and $140 billion a year in federal, state, and local taxes. And this is evidenced by the Social Security Administration's what's called their suspense file, taxes that cannot be matched to workers' names and Social Security numbers. And my figures are a little bit dated. I mean, I know that grew in the last decade by something like $20 billion. So it is a myth that immigrants don't pay taxes. They do. They pay into our system. What happens, though, is then they don't get the benefits of those taxes and those benefits that they pay in.
We have to take a short break. We are talking about immigration reform in the United States. My guest, Ruben Castilla Herrera of Reform Immigration for America. He's the Ohio director. Also, Ginny Lohman-Bauman. She is the Ohio field director for World Service Immigration Reform. And Jason Rivero. He is the Ohio state director for LULAC, League of United Latin American Citizens. We'll get to those phone calls, emails when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Emma Fett in for Amy Jurevich this week. Cloudy with a high near 49 today. Currently, it's just about 40 degrees and a little overcast. Partly cloudy tonight with a low around 39. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 59. And Thursday, mostly cloudy with a high near 57 and a chance of afternoon showers. Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on WOSU-TV, the Columbus Jazz Orchestra presents the music of Louis Armstrong's famous Hot Fives and Hot Sevens recordings in a performance from the magnificent Lincoln Theater in downtown Columbus. The concert features the renowned Byron Stripling on trumpet and guest performances from other jazz greats. Watch Louis Armstrong's Hot Fives and Hot Sevens Revisited from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra this Wednesday night on WOSU-TV. And now back to more All Sides with Ann Fisher here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about immigration reform in the United States with three advocates. We'd like to hear from you, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Kelly. Kelly writes, the U.S. openly welcomes anyone entering the country using the requisite methods. Therefore, why is a permanent wall on the border a bad thing in deterring those who blatantly skirt the rules? Okay, we didn't talk about the wall, but there's been that idea out there. What about a wall?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if Kelly is. Well, I don't know if Kelly's been on the wall. I have been on that wall, and I have to tell you that until you stand on that wall, I was in Nogales, the wall that separates the city, essentially, Nogales, Arizona, and Nogales, Sonora, in Mexico, and it's a wall that separates a city. And until you see the stark differences between drinking water, medical care, housing, and health care for the children on either side of that wall, I don't think you're in a position to talk about that wall. I really invite people who have not had an opportunity to work on the border, to see the border, to really talk about this, to read some books, do some research, go to the wall before you can make some comments. I think, you know, no less than the Catholic Church has said that and the country has a right to protect its border, but that is a not unrestricted or absolute right. People also have a right to migrate, especially when conditions in their homeland make it impossible for them to live healthy and dignified lives.
So this is much more of a complex issue than the here and now. There's a long history about our countries, about our borders.
The borders are actually man-made borders.
Exactly.
Yes.
And how those borders were drawn and who – I'm Mexican-American. I mean my grandparents were – my great-grandparents, actually, the border crossed them, and they didn't cross the border. And so without looking at the history of immigration, of migration, and we're just talking about south of the border, there's also – people have come to this country through different bodies of water and different ways, different methods, starting from the very founding, our very founding mothers and fathers of this country. And so it's easy to get caught up into that question, what is it about the law that you don't get? I get that. And really, I ask the same question to the people who ask me that. What is it about the law that you don't get? There's a long history that have separated us and connected us into these Americas. And you know, that's probably good enough for a whole nother show. But when you look at it right now, and when you look at the question of the whole idea of a wall, and that in itself is symbolic enough, and we know what walls are about tearing down walls, and we seem to be wanting to build them, and we need to look at that. The other issue is the trade issue with Central and Mexico, Central America. What are the implications of NAFTA and some of the other trade issues that have caused people to hardships to want to come over, really basically just to support their families? And again, that leads us back to the issue of families, family values, if you will.
Let's take a phone call, 614-292-8513. And Glenn, you're on the air. You want to know why there's the assumption that immigrants want to become citizens.
Yes. Let me first say I support the reform efforts that your guests are promoting today. I just have one small issue, which is about the assumption that everyone who comes here to work wants to be a citizen. I know that we have oil contractors, you know, engineers that go to Saudi Arabia and to Iraq, and they work there, but they don't have any intention of becoming Iraqi citizens. I think in the old days, people could come here, work for a period of time, go home to their family 6 months out of the year, and they had no reason to want to leave their home. Their home is their home. But we've made the border kind of a lobster trap, a one-way option. So once they get here, it's so hard to go back home, they are left with no option but to try to bring their families here.
Jason?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. I think, you know, and you see that especially within skilled labor, and there's always, you know, I think permanent residency is something that many try to aspire for. But I think there shouldn't be an assumption also that those that are low-wage workers are necessarily looking for that, but they are looking to at least in the term be able to work here with the proper documentation, and that's where we as a country need to appreciate those type of sectors of labor.
Don't we just have too few work visas issued for the demand?
No, exactly. I mean, we
that's
need
one
to
of the provisions
the,
and
the
yeah.
service industries, and when we're talking about farming and agriculture, I mean, those are all very needed, but we don't really realize that as an important sector and that we need these people.
And I might add that the other sector is it's not just the that particular workforce, but places like the Cleveland Clinic, places that, that need researchers, that, that really are looking to other countries to get people into these high-level research positions. It's the same kind of issue on that level as well. And so how do we provide that, that pathway for everyone? And again, it's, we're focusing, seems to be, on Latin America, but certainly that's issue that's relevant to people who've come here on asylum. There's many, there's a large African community here in central Ohio and actually the state that have come here on asylum and on, under asylum and now are under the may be deported because they are undocumented as well. We have a, just recently in the news, a Russian gymnast that came here in the late 80s, a gold medalist that was, when we needed her at the time, was Olympic gold medal coach, and now she doesn't meet that status anymore, and she's being threatened to be deported as well. The other issue that, that is important that I might want to add to that is that lots of times, and this is the case many times, these families have children that are born here and that are, in essence, American citizens. And so you may have a family that has two American citizens, two that are not born here. And so what happens with the separation of those families when that, when the undocumented status comes up and in the deportation and what have you? So that's you're right. The caller's exactly right. Not everyone may want to stay, but will stay because their children are on that pathway to wanting to become a citizen.
Thanks for your call, Glenn.
Thank you.
Let's see. Jerry, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, I think you answered some of my questions, okay. But I sometimes hear people say, you know, immigrants are always taking away things in our community, like jobs, or they don't pay taxes. And you did mention that, but I see them at stores and they're buying products, so I assume that they're contributing to the economy somehow, or even paying sales tax, or they're working and they're paying some kind of tax or contributing to the economy. And I've even seen some immigrants at church or service projects. So what kind of positive impacts are immigrants contributing to the community in terms of taxes, economic, or the community itself?
Yeah, well, let me answer some of that. And again, I refer back to the Justice for Immigrants material. There's a lot of material available on specifically this issue. One figure I have is that the net benefit of immigration to the U.S. is nearly $10 billion annually. Alan Greenspan pointed out that 70% of immigrants arrive in prime working age, and that means we haven't spent a penny on their education. Yet they are transplanted into our workforce and will contribute, according to Alan Greenspan, $500 billion toward our Social Security system over the next 20 years. In addition, the consumer spending of immigrant households, immigrants, and their businesses contribute, according to one figure I have, $162 billion in tax revenue to the U.S. federal, state, and local governments. And, another thing is that immigrants do send money back to their home countries, but some have said that this is one of the most targeted and effective forms of direct foreign investment as well.
Well, actually, the government's looking at relaxing or creating some kind of amnesty program for Haitians so that they can help support the people back in Haiti, I guess, ostensibly to reduce the burden on the United States, ultimately.
Let me if I could make a point here, yeah. And this is something I can reference as far as a report that was put out by the Texas controller. This was about 3 years ago. And she made a study specifically looking at the economic impact of the undocumented worker in Texas, and they concluded they came out in the black. So, in looking over the past couple of years, you look at a state like Texas that was one of the last to go into the recession and one of the first to come out of it. And, you know, a state that really has a serious issue with undocumented workforce, I think there's some way to relate that, and it's a very interesting study that look at Texas, and we're here in Ohio, and we're constantly battling bills that that state that undocumented workers are taking our jobs, but there's no study to really back that up. And the study that we can reference to is that Ohio is one of the lowest state with an undocumented workforce in the United States. So we're creating this witch hunt. We're sensationalizing the whole thing. So Ohioans think that we're being invaded and everyone's losing their job. But I have yet to encounter someone that's even in opposition that personally lost a job because to someone that that was undocumented.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. We have another email back from Kelly regarding the question about the wall. She said that people have a right to migrate, especially relative to health and clean water concerns. That's not the issue. The issue and my question address the fact that we openly welcome anyone wanting to come here and using the required legal methods. That's what citizenship is all about, following the rules. And I did have a question myself. What about the folks who are waiting their turn legally, that are doing everything right at the outset? What about them? What kind of message does do these kind of reforms send them? And I think that's kind of what Kelly was getting at.
Well, I think that it's not necessary to pit one group against the other. I think, in fact, one of the reasons that the faith community is asking for comprehensive immigration reform is to address the needs of all immigrants. We do know, for example, that we have many people waiting to be reunited with spouses and unmarried children, and they often have to wait 4 to 7 years to be reunited. Many U.S. citizens can apply to be reunited with their spouse, children, siblings, and parents, but they have to endure these waits, and it can be up to 22 years to be reunited with siblings. So I think for some people that hardship is insurmountable in lots of ways. But one of the primary concerns about the faith community is this concept of family unity in comprehensive immigration reform. And it's not necessary to pit one group against the other. We want to make the rules fair for everyone.
So the system is broken. The system as it is for everyone is not working. And I think that's the bottom line. And so I may agree with this the person who wrote this email, is that how do we fix a system that's broken for everyone? It's not about someone coming up to the front of the line. Everyone, it's difficult for everyone who's trying to get here at all levels. And so that's what we want to address it. And again, we tend to focus on a certain group of people, but the system is broken for all immigrants that are coming in here, from researchers that are needed in top level institutions like the Cleveland Clinic, to workers that are working there on more of a low wage worker. So we want to fix it for everyone. It's broken.
Well, I know we don't want to get into too many details regarding the Schumer-Graham proposal because it's just in an outline form right now. Senators Charles Schumer, a Democrat from New York, and Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, they've drawn up this outline for reform. The president spoke briefly about it the other day. One aspect of that is a flexible legal immigration system, which would be adjustable. It would adjust to the needs of the country at the time. How would that work? Is that something that you were talking about earlier, Ginny? Something like that?
I would have to study the Schumer and Graham proposal a bit mm-hmm. more. Again, as Ruben and I have discussed, this is not a bill yet,
right.
So there are some proposals. But I do think that all of us who are looking at comprehensive immigration reform want to do so in a way that it's not set in stone for a particular period of time, that in fact the needs of the country, the needs of the world may change over time, so that perhaps there's a way to build fair flexibility into such a system.
As far as how many workers do we need, how many should we let
Correct.
In, that kind of a thing. Okay, let's see. Barney, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. My name is Barry.
Barry. I can't see. That's my problem. It's Barry.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. My name is Barry. I'm from West Africa. I came here legally for 9 years ago. And there's a lot of people in my situation right now because of the broken immigration system. So my question for you, I'm a humble guest because of this, they do a very, very good job for the rally in Washington. My question for your guest is how to get people in this country, who are the people who are already in this country, to be legal. I'm not talking about being citizen because I'm guaranteed not all of them want to be citizen, but everybody want a good job, good health care, and a good education. That's what America offers around the world. Everybody want to come to America. If you guys open the border tomorrow, I know many countries, their population going to be emptied and to come to the United States. But the United States must be very, very grateful about it because for now, what I'm talking is the best country in the world to live on right now. But it might be another country in the next decade. But my question is this. America is very welcoming people. So how to get all these people legalized and keep working and keep paying tax and come out from the shadow? Because a lot of people are living underground because they don't have good paper, but they are working very hard to make their own living. And this is America can benefit and everybody can benefit. Immigration was going back and forth for a long, long time with all these extreme wings, like a lot of senators from the South Side who don't want immigrants to come to America. But my question, who come here legally on the first place? Nobody. everybody, I mean, work his way out to be legal and to respect the law of the land, to respect American law. That's what we do as African people who come here with a visa, all kind of different visa, but we come here legally, and we're still penalized by this system because of the people who come in from the south border of America. So I think that there's the best way to make everybody happy and American people to be more safer, because I know a lot of people who live underground in this country, which is not good for the country. And our community of African people who from the West is to like everybody to come out. Everybody, a lot of African people who live in Ohio. I live in Columbus, Ohio for the last 7 years, and we are very happy about it. But a lot of people who live there with other people.
Okay. Jason.
Yes, can I? Interesting enough, if you look at kind of the history of our organization, many would think that some of the cases that we've kind of pushed forward now has been for those that are undocumented, and that is the case, and always been pushing for immigration reform. But if you look at, especially back in 2002, we had a class action against what was formerly INS or ICE. And it was just simply to process those that are already in the system. There was over 100,000 that there were backlogged, so we had to go through the through the legal channels. And that's because I really feel that it's very vastly underfunded, especially the those processing channels. And it's sad that we have to use the courts to get these people that just like this gentleman that worked for 10 years or 15 years, waited and had all the qualifications and everything. They went through all the necessary steps, and they're still here stuck. So I think funding is a serious concern.
Ginny, you talked earlier about restoring the due process. There has been a big uptick in deportations. We have these prisons going up, or whatever you want to call them, retention centers all over the country. A lot of private prison companies are profiting from all of that. And people are just getting stuck in these places for months and months and months.
I think that's correct. I think that one of the reasons the faith community is unified around this, there are lots of reasons, but one is because of the horror of the detention facilities. In 2009, more than 380,000 immigrants were detained. Poor oversight of the facilities and insufficient medical treatment caused severe hardship to people and, in some cases, death. We also know of cases where nursing children, infants, have been ripped from their mother's arms in detention facilities, and families have been forcibly separated. When you see those kinds of degradations of human beings, we cannot stand silently by. And it's also a cost factor. You know, these detentions, these 380,000 detentions in 2009 cost $2 billion. That's just not an effective use of our tax dollars when there are better ways.
We're going to have to take a short break. We'll get back to it. We're talking about education reform. Wrong issue. Immigration reform. Glad you have a sense of humor, Ginny. And laughing over there is Ginny Lohman-Bauman. She is the Ohio Field Director for the World Service Immigration Reform. And also on the phone, Jason Rivero. He is Ohio State Director of the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC. And in the studio as well, Ruben Castilla Herrera. He is Ohio Director for Reform Immigration for America. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Superbug, we talk with journalist Maren McKenna, author of a new book about MRSA, the deadly drug-resistant bacteria that lurks in hospitals. Strains of it have gotten out into the community and the food chain. McKenna is a contributing writer at the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Join us.
Fresh Air is coming up today at noon in just about 20 minutes here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. Cloudy with a high near 49 today. Currently it's about 41 degrees and overcast. Tonight should be partly cloudy with a low around 39. Mostly sunny with a high near 59 tomorrow, and mostly cloudy with a high near 57 on Thursday with a chance of afternoon showers. When you don't have time to catch the whole story, get the update with the WOSU Daily News Loop. Receive award-winning local coverage and NPR headlines emailed every weekday right to your inbox. Catch up with current events or listen to a story you missed. Don't miss a beat with the WOSU Daily News Loop. To sign up, go to WOSU.org/email. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues now on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about immigration reform issues right now with Ruben Castilla-Herrera. He is Ohio Director for Reform Immigration for America. Ginny Lohman-Bauman, she is Ohio Field Director for World Church World Service Immigration Reform. Is that right, Ginny?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Jason Rivero, he is Ohio State Director for the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC. There's lots of calls, and we want to get to as many of those as possible. Let's see. I just want to make sure I don't hang up on anybody. Bill, you're on the air. You've been waiting a while. Thanks for the wait. Hey, Bill.
Hello.
Oh, Bill.
Hello.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I have the wrong. It's Anna. Sorry, I pushed the wrong button. Anna, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Quick comment. Alan Greenspan's comment, and Alan, we know, represents the government, which represents big business. And immigration does pose, as we all know, a lot of problems for education, law enforcement, and the medical community, which is why it needs to be controlled. Now, one of any government's duties is to protect its citizens. Legal immigration allows immigrants to come in, be medically evaluated, be treated before they're released into our country. Now, we can all appreciate and understand and empathize the issues about the wall and poor water and children suffering. That's a worldwide issue. But immigration is not an emotional, even a faith-based issue. Immigration is a legal issue, and it has to do with maintaining safety in this country.
Okay.
Now, Lou Dobbs, we know, has said the system's broken. We all know it. But it's been tolerated because 80 to 90% of the drugs have entered this country through Mexico. And that's a known fact. People have known that for 30 years. This is why people who are influencing our government did not want the border controlled, because they were making big bucks.
So you're saying the drug dealers are controlling the government's...
Not directly, but there's a lot of... The drug dealers have the big bucks. And who does big business like? They like people with money.
Big bucks. Well, let's let our panel respond. You brought up a lot of things, Anna. I want to make sure they get a chance.
Thank
Thanks. Thanks for your call.
These are... those are two... I don't know if we want to get into the drug side of it, because that's a completely different subject. But think we all... That's a part where I think most of the panelists that are here agree that we do think we need to do something with... It's the law itself, and that's the constant revision of that law and adjustment. But that's not what's happening now. We're neglecting those legal provisions. And so we're just saying let's bring it up for reform and let's constantly look at it.
Yeah, Anna, laws change all the time. Why not amend this law, these laws as well? Why not? Are you there?
Are you talking to me?
Anna? I was talking to Anna.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I guess she's off the air. Okay. Well, I mean, that's sort of kind of between a rock and a hard place when you start talking about it in those kind of terms. It's the law. Just obey the law. What you all are proposing and a lot of people are proposing is change the laws.
Well, and I have to take issue with several things that Anna said, and I don't know that she really gave us particular information that we can go and look further other than making some controversial statements. You know, immigration is a legal issue, but it's also an issue of faith, and it's also an issue for our communities. And it's why our faith leaders are united around immigration reform. It's interesting to me that she'd like to undercut the power of the diverse faith community in Ohio being united around the call for comprehensive immigration immigration reform, because in this instance, the faith leaders feel it's their moral obligation to end the unnecessary suffering that's been caused by our broken system. And I just have to say that even in my own tradition, in the Christian tradition, the parable of the Good Samaritan teaches us that doing nothing in the face of catastrophic suffering is not an option. So we, the faith community, is not standing idly by doing nothing. They are becoming actively involved in this issue because of the suffering that has been visited upon an entire class of people that that in past decades our society has not tolerated.
Before the break, you accidentally said education reform.
Right.
But what it reminded me is that there's a lot of education to be done with this issue. And in lots of what I heard, and I take issue to what was said, but I understand that a lot of that sentiment is out there, that education and people being fearful because of mistruth that seem to travel faster. Now, this is an emotional issue. If you're talking about families, this is an emotional issue. And this is a faith issue as well, I would say, as a person of faith. And to deny that is really not to see the issue. Again, there are some laws that need to be changed if they're wrong. Our country was built upon changing laws for women, for blacks, the LGBT community now perhaps. And so when there is a law that's wrong, we have to stand together and change it. Now, we saw that $250,000 person strong march where we said that. This is wrong. The time is now to change this. And so we're not talking merely about enforcing a law. We're talking about changing a law that's not right. That's
Jason?
Simple.
And I think half of the frustration, I think especially coming from what the caller, is that we really don't know. We throw out these figures 12, 15, 10. We really don't know, and that's the whole big issue with that, is that law enforcement, the medical community, every one of those sectors that she mentioned, is that these folks are in the shadows. And all we're saying is that we need to properly identify and say how many people we really are here. And in the long run, this will be more effective for law enforcement to be able to go after the necessary criminals. It'll be more effective in the long run to be able to make sure that people pay into a system. And as a matter of fact, I mean, immigrants are willing to go and pay into a health care plan, but they're not given that right. So we're denying that by completely denying their identity within this country.
Going to take another call. Nancy, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, hi. Didn't hear my name. Hi. I want to agree with those who said, I guess, Ann Fisher, you said, why don't we fix the law to make it work? As I understand it right now, there really aren't legal ways for the average Mexican or Central American who's picking tomatoes or working in a hotel to come to the U.S. There's no line to do that. Because we have employer-based and family-based immigration systems, and it's not as if someone who just decides I want to go, you know, work in America to support my family in Guatemala is able to just sign up at your local consulate and say, you know, wait in line for my ticket or my visa. And I disagree with the caller who asserted that immigrants cause a lot of problems for our education and health systems. It's my understanding that even permanent legal residents don't have access to many government benefits, and that there are a lot of myths about how much government support immigrants are able to get. I wondered if your panel could clarify some of that.
Yeah, we talked earlier about that, about how they do pay in billions and billions of dollars a year in taxes, but they don't have access to a lot of the benefits. Was that what you meant? You were talking about that earlier, Jenny?
Correct. I think that, for example, I think one of the biggest myths is that somehow immigrants come here and take welfare, for example. Well, if you're undocumented, you don't qualify for any of that. You can't get food stamps. You can't get a free medical card. You can't get a lot of the benefits that are available. And as I mentioned, what we have is many immigrants through Social Security numbers that sometimes are secured by their employers, these inaccurate numbers. And so they do pay taxes into the system and workers' comp and all of that, but then they don't get the benefit of that. And some of the figures I do have is that the ratio between immigrant use of public benefits and the amount of taxes they pay is consistently favorable to the U.S. over time. In one estimate, immigrants earn about $240 billion a year, pay about $90 billion a year in taxes, and only use about $5 billion in public benefits. So I think, again, that is a myth about immigrants that's perpetuated by those that would like to demonize a certain class of people.
You know, the other health issue is interesting because what we do know is that the immigrants, Mexicans, Central Americans, come into this country healthier, in better health than the average American that has full insurance. That we do know. That's a fact. And somehow the emotional part of that is that we're draining the hospitals, and maybe people have visuals or whatever it might be that people have that experience. But immigrants actually come to this country healthier than Americans. And that's – I think that's the tie-in to the healthcare issue that interestingly enough, our march, it kind of tied into the vote of what was happening there at the Capitol, is they're not entirely – the healthcare system is broken as well. Hopefully we're on the path of fixing that as well. That's another American issue as well. But it is a myth that immigrants are draining the health system here in this country.
Thanks, Nancy, for your call.
Sure.
Randy, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I was calling with a question just to clarify. I thought I heard one of the guests state that immigration was a civil matter and not a criminal. I understood it's federal immigration policy.
Yeah. Ginny, you're a lawyer.
Correct.
Didn't mention that.
That's correct. And let me say, let me refer you to several resources in this regard, because I don't claim to be a policy expert or an immigration law expert on this issue. But let me give you a couple of resources. Again, I refer you to the Justice for Immigrants campaign materials, and they have something called Responses to Comprehensive Immigration Reform Arguments. And they specifically state that undocumented immigrants are not criminals. They have not broken a criminal law. They have only violated a civil law. And there is a distinction in our country between civil and criminal laws. The United States Supreme Court has held that a deportation proceeding is a purely civil action to determine the eligibility to remain in this country, not to punish an unlawful entry. The purpose of deportation is not to punish past transgressions, but to put an end to a continuing violation of civil immigration laws. So I offer that. I mean, again, that's probably too lengthy, but let me give folks a couple of references so that they can find out for themselves how to evaluate this issue. I've mentioned the Justice for Immigrants material. There's also a great book called Welcoming the Stranger, Justice, Compassion, and Truth in the Immigration Debate by Matthew Sorens and Jenny Huang. I offer those resources to people so they can go and read for themselves what the answers to some of these questions are.
Randy, does that help clarify it for you?
Yes. I just thought that it was a federal – it is still a federal matter, but it's a federal civil matter, not a federal criminal matter.
Right.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Bill, you're on the air.
Thanks for waiting. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Earlier, I want to expand on an earlier topic. What's good for the country? As a person watching the parade, I'm not an immigrant myself. My grandfather was, but not me. I see the immigration laws. One factor in them is quotas, obviously, and I see the political aspect of it was being the group that can yell the loudest gets the most immigration influence. What I would like to know, and these folks may know, do we have some studies now that are looking at our carrying capacity? For example, in Wyoming, they're getting water shortages. If we were to double that population, we'd have real population problems and water problems out there to go with that population. So if I use the word carrying capacity, that's what I'm referring to. What's good for the country? And are you folks familiar with any studies we're looking at? What's good for the country? Should we go from, say, 300 million up to 600 million? Is that any problem? What would happen if we did? So I'll quit talking and listen.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
The first thing that comes to mind is we're not talking about opening borders. We're talking about people that are here already. So how do we create that pathway to citizenship for those that are here already, whether they're in Wyoming or Ohio or any part of the country, is how do we create the legislation that could have a pathway to citizenship for those people that are here?
Right. And I think that – oh, go ahead, Jesus.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, one of the, you know, I think this is a tough issue, and it's a tough issue because people, they're kind of different models of looking at our resources. There's kind of a scarcity model that, hey, we only have so much. There's only one pie, and if someone takes more than their share, there's not enough left for me. Or you can look at kind of the multiplication model, which is there's enough for all of us. We just have to figure out how to use our resources effectively. And I do know, looking at immigration, I do know that current legal limits on both temporary and permanent immigration are unresponsive right now to changes in labor demand. We've got these arbitrary numerical limits that are not responsive to changes in labor demand. So that comprehensive immigration reform is a way to change our laws to become more responsive to changes in labor demand as we're looking at how many people should be coming into the country or leaving the country to serve other countries.
Is this a bad time, though, with the unemployment where it is to be looking for reforms on that level that so many people are unemployed right now, and they feel like they're competing with people who are undocumented workers here and aren't supposed to be working in the United States. Jason?
I think politically, I mean, it's always, you know, people will latch on to any subject. I think, and that's where when the gentleman was asking for any studies, the only ones I've seen have come down to an economic type of look on immigration. And from what I know is that for us to remain competitive with China, that we will need a immigrant workforce and continue those numbers. And so the whole, yeah, bringing it up during this time, that's why the rally and everything, it's not like we're basing it off of what's going on in Washington. It's something that has to happen now because we're reaching that point within our local communities and on the federal level where things are getting very, very messy. I mean, we can't just ignore this issue, and it can't be just enforcement only, but we have to look at it straight in the eye and tackle it this year because I see the crimes, I see the racial profiling, we see that within our own communities. And it's frustrating on our end, but I'm sure it's very frustrating for those that are seeing this happen and are against the undocumented coming over. So there's not doing something is very troubling. So,
Jason, maybe if I could add in that again, I think that's another myth that immigrants take jobs in America, take jobs and opportunities away from Americans, and it's particularly used in times when all people are hurting.
Right.
So sometimes they're because of the fear that people are operating under, there's a tendency to turn against those that some would consider other, and rather than recognizing that we are in this all together, we are all Americans, we're all here. Let's figure out a way to make this work so that it's fair to everyone and that everyone is treated with dignity. Let me also make a point with respect to the last couple of callers as well, that I do want to ask listeners to consider whether they actually have the information to make informed decisions about these kind of issues. I've noticed when talking to people about these issues that people operate out of what I would call a weak information field. They hear one or two anecdotal stories and they make up their mind about immigration reform, and they do not have enough information and facts to back up what they are talking about. And I just urge your listeners and to be considerate and thoughtful in how they form their opinions about comprehensive immigration reform. Do some research, read some books, and rather than just listening to commentators who give one or two prejudiced opinions.
Well, you know, that brings me to my next – thanks, Bill, for the call, by the way, and it brings me to my next email from Chip. He says, the name of the show is All Sides. I am frankly sympathetic to the concept of immigration reform, but this is not an exploration of the topic with input from varying perspectives. Today's show is simply advocacy. And, of course, just to take a break here, I said at the outset that these were advocates of immigration reform. I reject the notion, for example, that those who have not stood upon the border barrier have no status to comment on the subject. I further reject the notion that bad water in Mexico is sufficient condition to allow unfettered immigration. He says, it's your show. You can be an advocate if you wish, but please don't ask that your listeners believe that the name of the show is appropriately descriptive. Okay, there we go. There, it's out there. Of course, I welcome any calls from anybody, and we'll certainly have other opinions on the show in due course. For now, though, I'd like to thank our opinion leaders today. Ruben Castilla Herrera, he is Ohio Director for Reform Immigration for America. Ruben, thanks for being with us today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Also, the Reverend Ginny Lohman Bauman, she is Ohio Field Director for World Church World Service Immigration Reform. Thanks, Jenny, for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate
and
it.
And Jason Rivero, he is Ohio State Director for the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC. Jason, thanks for being on the panel today.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
Appreciate it. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener support at WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.